If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'm going to tell you what you need to know. I'm going to tell you what you need to hear.
Fourth quarter of the program begins right now. Finishing strong here on a Wednesday. That feels kind of like a Thursday because we did some Thursday stuff.
It was half
earlier.
Thursday.
It's a little bit of 25% Thursday. That's what it was, to be honest with you. Our need to know is brought to you by our friends at Corona, Corona Light, Corona Premier, and those Corona Hard Seltzers. If you are looking for a place to party at Cinco de Mayo, we're giving you great spots, stopping all over the city. Going to be at the Barrio Taqueria tomorrow. That's at 31st Street there in the Martini Corner District. Great spot, great rooftop, all kinds of beautiful outdoor area right there. Come on out. We'll be there from 2 to 6 tomorrow, and then on Friday at the Salty Iguana in Independence. Wash it all down. Great Mexican food with some Coronas. Corona Premier, if you're watching the waistline, lower carbs, lower calories, check out that Corona Premier. You will love it. I guarantee it. We will see you at one of our remotes, we hope, or maybe at Cinco de Mayo with Corona in hand. All right, let's start with the Royals today. The boys in blue getting it done yet again. Break them up. They're really good people. 6-1, the final, I believe, right?
6-1, they finished them off. Yep.
Still saying middle ninth on mine. Yeah, there it is. 6-1, final score. Seth Lugo gets the win. He's dealing again. Not just the fact that he gave up just two hits and one run. Walked two in seven innings. Four base runners in seven innings, only one run. But again, the high strikeout total. 8 Ks on the day for Seth Lugo. Not just pitching well, but also missing bats. And we kind of thought, well, maybe he's over his skis because he wasn't missing bats. Now he's missing bats.
Added something that we thought maybe it wasn't as sustainable, but now he's added the thing he's been missing.
Throw in a scoreless inning from Stratton and Anderson. They combined, throw two innings, a two-hit, no run, no walk, two strikeout baseball. And the Royals have one hell of a pitching day, 6-1 over to the Toronto Blue Jays. Kyle Isbell and Pascatino each doubled in the game. Michael Massey homers again. He homered yesterday, he homered again today. His second home run on the year. Salvador Perez picks up an RBI. He's now got 27. That leads the ball club. They are off on Friday.
No, they're off, tomorrow.
Off on Thursday.
Start again Friday.
Again, we're Wednesday, so tomorrow is Thursday. I'm thinking like it's a Thursday. But yeah, off Thursday, and then back at it on Friday will the boys in blue as they continue to wage war. This now makes them 7-6 through 13.
Yeah, they were 5-5 coming in.
Yep, 7-6 through 13 in this 19-game stretch against teams above 500.
Now, I believe they have, in this stretch, they've put the Blue Jays back below 500, but that's of their doing. So.
Yes, that's of their doing. They've beaten them 5 out of 7
mm-hmm.
in these two series. They now have Texas coming in on Friday for 3, followed up by Milwaukee, all 6 games at home. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday for your viewing pleasure. What are we going to see for attendances?
Well, I think Saturday, I think you'll get a good showing because I think isn't Saturday the Star Wars night?
Okay. Bobby Witt, Jedi bobblehead.
Yeah. So I think you'll get a good showing. Now, I don't know if that's a special, you got to buy a special ticket or what, but point being, I think they'll get a good show. I don't think they'll get... I will say one of their games goes over 18,000 this weekend.
I will guarantee 20-plus on Saturday.
Will you?
They went 23,000 against Baltimore.
Okay.
On April 20th.
I guess, well, then, yeah, that's I didn't catch that. I'm still waiting. The 20s, I was going to wait till till like after school let out. But I mean, yeah, if they've already had a 20, there's no reason, or 23.
That's the only one that's over 20, 18,000 on that Sunday. Royals lost both of those games, but again, they're winning baseball, playing winning baseball. I think they top 20 on both Saturday and Sunday. And I think Friday, the Friday night game of that series at 17, I'm going to go bold and daring. Three straight over 20.
I will go all three over 18, and I'll go one over 20.
Three over 20. And they might push 30 on Saturday.
Did they – what's 2 million? What's that an average? Because I know they got to 2 million in 15.
And if they sold out every game, they'd be just shy of 3 million,
okay.
Which is what I think their goal should be. It would be to average 2 million, they need 24-7.
Okay, so I doubt they get there.
No, I don't think they're going. I think they'll get there soon, though.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they went. The thing about 14 is obviously the end of it ended so great, but there were five games below 500 at the All-Star break. So it's not like, you know, it's not like they had a sustained run, whereas 15, you had the momentum coming off the runner-up and the AL pennant, and then they played great baseball the whole year. But I think, if you go past Memorial Day, it's kind of, and that's the old cliche time to judge them, but if you go past Memorial Day and they're still hanging around this, you know, 7 to 10 above 500 mark within a couple games of first, people are going to show up.
Yeah. I think they're going to start coming. I mean, like, now's the time. This was it. This was, we put this out there. These are good teams. They're going up against talented teams. Right now they're 7-6 with six games to go, and all six at home, they're validating what they did. They beat up on the bad teams, and they're playing 500-ish ball against the good teams. That makes you a legitimate playoff contender. Now, that may change as they take on more injuries.
Yeah, that's true.
But they've taken some on now. Alec Marsh went down. No, they didn't do great with Jonathan Bolin, but their other guys are picking it up elsewhere, and that was a competitive game. The bats came alive that day. They only lost by a run when Jonathan Bolin only went two and change in that. There's every reason for people to start investing in the season.
We all kind of sat here, if I remember right, and said we'd be satisfied. It's not we want to aim for more, but we would have been satisfied with 8-11 over this stretch, and they got to win one more to get there. And they've got six games to do it, so they've, you know, they're doing actually better. I mean, 7-6, you can't go 500 with an even number of games, but they're with an odd number of games. But you're essentially hanging exactly where you want to be if you're a really good team against other good teams. They're hanging around 500. Beat up on the bad ones, yeah. 500 on the good ones.
Reason to be excited, Royals fans. Get excited because they are playing good baseball. Let's talk about Travis Kelce on his podcast. He talked about his contract. You know, he just signed a two-year extension, making him the highest-paid tight end in football. He went through some of the details.
I am so freaking thankful to Brett Veach, Mark Donovan, Coach Reed, Big Red. I love you, big guy. And obviously, Clark Hunt, man. The Hunt family has been absolutely unbelievable to not only myself and this Kansas City community, but they've just been so generous since I've been here and making it feel like home. And for the past 12 years, man, I've been able to make this place exactly that. And I've loved every single second of it. I'm going to love the next 2 years playing here in Kansas City. I'm so excited and I'm so thankful to this organization for getting it done and making me feel appreciated and compensated the right way. And on top of that, I got to move the needle for the tight end room. It's everyone else's job to go out there and keep making that tight end AAV number go up and up with every single contract that's better than mine. I can't thank Kansas City enough. My agents keep knocking on that door. I'm not a guy that sits out. I'm not a guy that holds out. I'm a guy that loves coming into the building, and the Chiefs know that. I'm extremely grateful and extremely thankful for everybody involved, man. I love Kansas City for it.
Pretty cool. Not much to not like there.
I think, and he said before how much, you know, rings and championships build legacies, and that's what he's focused on. Nobody was ever going to pay him like a top five wide receiver, but I sincerely believe he could have, if money is what mattered most to him, he could have found his way to a team probably not a good team, but a team that would have paid him more like wide receiver money than tight end money, and he hasn't done that. And I think it's because of one, he wants rings, and two, everything you just said about the Chiefs.
Where will the Chiefs play in years to come? A lot of people speculating it could be Kansas, and it still could be. But last night, the Kansas legislature ended their session with no decision on stadium funding. Governor Laura Kelly is expected to veto a tax cut, so a special session may be called to override that veto, and the stadium funding might be discussed then. So it didn't get done last night, but apparently part of the negotiations are they want a tax cut. And
so the tax cut, I wrote that kind of sloppy. This tax cut thing is totally separate from the stadium thing.
Right. It's other people want things. This is how government gets done. It's not just on the issue. Well, if you want me to talk about your thing, you got to handle my thing. They want a tax cut. They couldn't get the tax cut, so they didn't push forward on the stadium. But if they have a special session, if they veto the governor, then we could be talking about the stadium again, still in Kansas. So not dead in Kansas and not even dead now on getting this funding done. What is a stadium worth? Well, I don't know. What's an NFL team worth? I'm not sure. What's a Miami Dolphin team worth? You're going to hear people say the Dolphins are worth $10 billion. Because if you just read the headlines, you'll see that Dolphins owner Stephen Ross turns down $10 billion for offer, $10 billion offer for control of the Miami Dolphins. Smaller print, and the stadium, and the F1 race.
Details, details.
Details, details. $5.7 million is the estimate on the value of the Miami Dolphins in this said amount. $5.7 million, which means that the stadium and the F1 race, which is Sunday, the Miami Grand Prix is Sunday, and they race around it. People never watched it through the parking lot and around, all around where the stadium is. But the stadium's inside the track that they create there at the Dolphin Stadium. All of that then would be valued at somewhere in the neighborhood of $4.3 billion.
So you know the F1 stuff. It's got to hit eventually. Everything, not just racing, not just sports, everything hits a peak value. Formula One really has blasted into the world in popularity over the last few years. I don't think they're at their peak value yet. But do you think that's a responsible investment for one F1 race?
Well, you own the first of all, he's put $1 billion into renovating the stadium.
Okay.
Over the years, and creating, building around too, so that they can have events like this that are there. So I think the race comes with the stadium, because whoever owns the stadium owns the race. And so it is a moneymaker. To your point, there is an element of the poker craze. There's an element of the NASCAR craze. Like F1, I've said F1 has a problem. I love Formula One racing, but it is not, if you grew up on NASCAR, and I've had people be like, hey, I watched that F1 Drive to Survive, I really love it, but I can't sit through a race. I totally get it. Because if you grew up on NASCAR where they're trading the lead 2-3 times on a lap, that ain't how F1 works, right? You get, right now, Max Verstappen's crushing everybody, right? One guy on one team is winning all the races. You have to get into the storylines and the money and all that. It will crest. Right, and I don't know that the U.S. can house 3 races a year. Right now they're in Miami, they're in Austin, and they're in Vegas. And I don't know that they can carry. I don't think they'll have 3 in perpetuity. Right, I unless they keep ratcheting up how many races they have. But they do have an issue in competitiveness on the track, and Americans are new to it because of the show. But I think the show, they dig, they check out the race, and when the races aren't competitive, they're out.
I do think Miami will have some staying power with it, because from an outsider's perspective, it seems like as much as just the race itself, there's also like a gala element to it where the rich and famous
have
a place to show up, and Miami is a city like that.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. All right, we want to talk some NFL draft with Seth Kaiser. We're going to do that. The Chief in the North newsletter, he writes it. We will talk Chiefs football, Chiefs draft picks, his film analysis. What did they get? We talk about that next with Seth Kaiser here in the program.
He's a pastor who likes the passing game, an attorney who enjoys play action more than class action. and he loves to watch Chiefs game tape for hours and hours and hours. He's Seth Kaiser of The Athletic on the program.
Let's break down the Chiefs draft. Seth Kaiser does a fantastic job breaking it down. His Chief in the North newsletter, great read, and a great video study of the draft picks. Our coverage of the Chiefs draft is brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. Did you know you can be seen by the same experts that care for the Royals, the Chiefs, and... yes, that's right. You're Kansas City Current. In fact, how about this? The official health care provider of the Kansas City Current, the University of Kansas Health System, recognizes the unique challenges that female athletes face. That's why they created the region's only female athlete program, helping student athletes and adult weekend warriors reach their full potential when it comes to athletics. You can learn more right now. Ladies, go to kansashealthsystem.com/female athlete. That's kansashealthsystem.com/female athlete. Let's welcome Seth Kaiser to the festivities. Seth, how are you, sir?
I am doing very, very well. How are you today?
Doing great. Appreciate the time. And let's start with this. What letter grade do you give the Chiefs draft?
I give it an A, and I swear I'm not just being a homer there.
But two reasons I like that. One, I value your opinion, and I'm a Chiefs fan, so that's great news. Two, you didn't give me some cockamamie crap about, oh, I don't do letter picks. Well, shut up and do it now. All right? Give it a shot. No one's going to hold you to it. We all know it will do a lot better grading it in 5 years, but it's fun to look at it. Do you like what they did? We'll see what they do in their career, but going in, do you like what they did? And you do, and I do, and so does everybody else. We can't be wrong, can we?
Well, sure we can, if these guys just don't turn out the way that we're projecting them to.
Right.
And that's, you know, and that can happen, but here's the great thing about this draft. If I were to just, let's say, go through the first three rounds, okay? What I'm about to say I think is true about the rest of the draft, too. But let's face it, the farther you get into the draft, the less you know about anything. You know, you're taking shots. They did a good job, in my opinion, marrying need and best player available. And that's a hard line to walk. They showed a certain amount of discipline in refusing to, based on the reports that we have, you know, that like they were trying to move up a little sooner and just things didn't quite work out. But they showed discipline without giving up too much. The trade-up for Xavier Worthy, it was hilarious as the draft moved along. They gave up less to move up four spots in the first round than teams were giving up to move up spots in the second, third, and fourth round. So that's nice, right? And you didn't give up picks. You swapped picks. That's all nice, well, and good. But with those first three picks specifically, if you were to say to someone, hey, what are some potential needs on the roster, one would have said wide receiver, offensive tackle, and tight end would have come up, in my opinion, in terms of maybe needing someone down the road. Noah Gray is entering, you know, another year of his deal, and he's been okay as your second tight end, but maybe wanting to raise the ceiling, never knowing what's going to happen with Kelce and those 13 personnel groupings they love to use, that sort of thing. So they did that, but they also got talented guys. They didn't sacrifice talent to get positions of need. And that's often it's presented as a zero-sum game. You got to either do for need or best player available. Sometimes the board just falls right to where you can grab probably the most talented guy available at both spots in the first and the second round in terms of Xavier Worthy. And then Kingsley, and I'm not even going to try with his last name because I'm not brave enough yet.
Suamataia.
Man, that's well done.
I've been working on it since the draft, and Curtis gave me the trick. And you'll do it in three parts. And that was, by the way, the first time I just rattled it off pretty quick ever. So you heard my best so far. Suamataia. Plus, I also just talked to Hans Olsen in the first hour of the program, who's the color analyst for BYU, and he gave me a little bit of a tip. You got to really hit the IA, right? So it's, if you break it into three parts, Suamataia, Suamataia. You know, it almost sounds Italian the way it kind of comes up. But I want to hear him say it, and I'm sure I'm off a little bit. But that's been my best guess at it. And I'm with you. Where did you think he should go or would go?
It was really interesting. I did a whole series on wide receivers leading up to the draft. And in the finale, I wrote about, I tiered the receivers. You know, I placed them into different tiers about what I would do in the draft if I were Brad Veach. Of all the receivers, not including the big three, because everyone knew they were never going to get, you know, one of the big three guys, Xavier Worthy ended up second on my list behind Brian Thomas Jr., who was my favorite. And Worthy was my second favorite, and he landed in the take him at 32, and if you have to trade up a little bit to get him, great. And so that's actually exactly what I would have done in terms of team fit, in terms of 3 years of solid college production, in terms of what I saw on film. He was one of my favorite receivers whose film I reviewed out of, I think it was 16 guys I ended up looking at. And then in terms of Kingsley, I didn't know anything about him before the draft. Because I was reviewing wide receivers, and I can't be an expert on anything, let alone everything. So with Kingsley, I took a look at him once the draft, you know, went down, posted the film review the next day, and a lot of the offensive linemen guys that I trust, like Brandon Thorne, they really liked him. And so that was obviously a great sign right out of the gate. And then once I got a chance to review his film, you really do see why there were times that he was mocked to the Chiefs at the end of the first. It would have been a bit of a reach or whatever you want to call it. But all the traits are there. And the things that you have with him, to steal a line from Mike Tomlin, it's coaching stuff, right? In terms of like you fix his hand placement, and you are cooking with gas with him. He's got the length you want. He's really proportionately built. He moves well for a guy his size. He's got strong upper body, strong lower body. He's got the athleticism. He's got what you want in every facet of it. It's just a matter of really, like, seriously, if you were to boil it down to one thing, consistency with hand usage. That would be it. He also has a couple of go-to moves in pass protection in terms of a nice snatch and trap that most guys haven't really mastered until they get in the league, and some guys never do. So you can see what he did with those first two picks especially. It's exactly what I would have done given the way the draft broke down.
We're talking right now to Seth Kaiser here in the program, Chief of the North Newsletter. He writes it. You should read it. I did. The video's great, and I love the story you referenced. Let me back up to Xavier Worthy. Because it was your story that had me really kind of pounding the drum to trade up for Brian Thomas. You had a great, yeah. I thought one of the coolest things you showed was a kind of like a before, not a before and after, but kind of like a couple stride difference on Brian Thomas that when he was running and tracking a deep ball, had his head turned, and how he was gaining separation from a Florida defensive back, right? Not some, you know, rummy directional school in that throwaway game the SEC has in week, you know, 14 or whatever. I guess a Florida DB, he's pulling away while looking back for the ball. I was enamored with Brian. I'm like, I love that. That's great. What a great visual to show the ability. Of course, the Jaguars take him at 23. He's gone. We know there's great speed with Xavier Worthy. What's it look like when he looks back, though? Right? Does he kill all that speed when he looks back, or is he still pretty good at that as well?
He's still pretty good at that as well. I wouldn't say, you know, both him and Thomas showed something similar in that regard. Thomas, I think, is higher level at it. The difference between him and Worthy is Worthy usually by that time probably has an extra step or two. So, and then plus when you're slowing down from blazing fast, it doesn't matter quite as much. And Thomas has blazing fast deep speed too. It's just he doesn't quite, he's got great acceleration, not quite what Worthy has. He tracks the ball well too. He adjusts to it. I'm more and more lean in the direction that deep ball quarterback accuracy is a wide receiver stat just as much as it is a quarterback stat. And that's especially true at the NFL level. Now, at the college level, by the way, college quarterbacks are really bad. Like, that's one thing I've taken away from all this charting of wide receivers. Going from Patrick Mahomes to college quarterbacks, even like the really good prospects, it almost broke my brain. But in the pros, you know, most quarterbacks, they're good at throwing the ball deep overall, right? These are 32 of the best quarterbacks on the planet. The difference maker can often be, and some guys throw a really good, really pretty deep ball or more accurate consistently, that's all true. But a guy like Tyler Lockett, who is able to, like what I showed with Brian Thomas and in Xavier Worthy's article, I showed a couple of plays with the same thing, the ability to look over your shoulder, kind of accurately predict where the ball is going, track the trajectory, adjust where you're going, and run underneath the ball. What ends up happening there, even if it's not a very accurate throw, and Worthy had, you know, the touchdown catch against Alabama that everyone talks about, looks about, they talk about his deep speed there. But what they should really be talking about is two things. First is the tempo of that route. He didn't sprint through it the entire time. You don't want to play it that way because it lets the safety know that you're running deep. Instead, he showed tempo, showed some discipline, and then throttled up. The second thing was, it was a terrible throw. It was thrown way more towards the middle of the field. He was heading towards the corner of the end zone. The quarterback put it more towards the middle of the field, and Worthy had to adjust and come back, and he was able to do it without losing much speed. But by the time he catches it, because it's right in the breadbasket, because he runs underneath it, everyone says, what a throw! But it wasn't. And that's one reason you need to really look at the trajectory of a wide receiver when the ball was released versus when the ball arrives. And if they have the ability to look over their shoulder, track it down, and run underneath it, and that makes him a much more legitimate deep threat than a guy who's kind of reliant on the ball going where he's already going.
Do you think Suamata-Ia should be the front runner to start on opening day, or do you think he's more of a project, maybe later in the year, maybe next year? Who wins that left tackle spot?
You know, I really, even after they drafted him, I continue to think it makes sense to bring back Donovan Smith, bring him back as a veteran to where, you know, you set your floor. But I'm a big fan of setting the floor, right? Like, that's something that makes me way more comfortable with a team, because you can never count on hitting the ceiling, but you can almost always count on at some point hitting your floor, and you want that to be as high as possible. I do think Kingsley, and I'm going to stick with that because, again, I'm not as brave as you, I think he absolutely could start in year one right away, and there are going to be hiccups because he's a young player. But I think he could get by with it and end up providing the same level of play that they had last year, if not higher. The big thing will be how quickly he takes to some of the coaching on some of the little inconsistency stuff that he needs to work on. And I don't know if the Chiefs can know that until they're in pads a month into training camp, right? And so that's the part that spooks me. He definitely has the talent to do it. He has the build, feet, and length and power of a first-round pick. The consistency isn't as good, which is interesting because last year that's a similar thing to what you'd say about Wanya Morris, except Kingsley's more athletic than he is. So it puts him in an interesting position, at least, where you've got two talented guys that fell in the draft farther than people thought they would. Maybe letting them battle it out, see who wins, I'd be relatively comfortable with that as well, because you're at least trying to double your chances of hitting there.
All right, let's move on into the fourth round. What do you think of Wiley, the tight end?
I think, first and foremost, that people need to stop comparing the poor guy to Travis Kelce, because that's not right. And I will say this, what everyone sees is, wow, that guy's really tall. Wow, that guy's 250 pounds plus. He's big and he moves really well. He accelerates really well with the ball in his hands, moves kind of smooth in space. Does that remind you of anyone coming out of Cincinnati? Mm. Of course it does. But there's a bunch of other stuff to Kelce as well that made him great immediately and over the years. And you can't just count on some poor guy who had a really solid final year in college but was never a star, which, of course, Kelce wasn't either. It's not really a fair position to put him in. And what people have to understand, and I say all this before I say something really homeristic about Wiley. What people have to understand is Travis Kelce's role in the offense right now isn't what it was his first full 2 or 3 years, because he ran a lot more kind of what your standard tight end routes would be, as well as some quick screens because he could explode and run away and stuff. Well, then Andy Reid figured out and Kelce figured out that he can run every single route on the route tree of an ex-wide receiver. And so his role is different than what anyone else's is going to be. So you can't expect him to be a Travis Kelce replacement or even an heir apparent. What you can do is evaluate him based on his tight end traits. The good news with that is he moves really well for a big guy. He actually has the same athletic profile as Noah Gray, except he's like 3 inches taller, 10 to 15 pounds heavier. And you can see that when he lines up as an inline tight end, he looks like another tackle out there because he's 6'6", and he's really broad. He moves well, snatches the ball out of the air, runs decent routes. It doesn't do anything too special there, but his acceleration allows him to threaten up the seam really well, and it allows him to get yak really well. I really like his skill set, and I think Gray is obviously going to have the edge because he's been in the system for multiple years. We know how much Andy Reid loves that. But I think Wiley might give him a fight for snaps.
How about Hicks' safety? This is the one that everybody thinks was supposed to go way higher, and he just fell into their lap. If there's one that was just a – listen, I think there's a need at safety more than people realize. Mike Edwards left, Brian Cook's coming off an injury, and Justin Reed's going to be in his final year. So there's need at that spot. It's not just pure luxury, but everybody thinks he should have gone higher. Do you agree?
You know, I've only gone through one game of his so far, and so it's early for me to say completely, but what I will say is I love the fact that he lined up everywhere. You watch 20 snaps, and he might be lined up somewhere differently on 10 of them. It's really interesting watching him move all over the field. He might be too deep. He might be, you know, lined up as a pure linebacker. He might be a robber. He didn't do a lot of single high stuff, but I really like that he lined up all over. I love his size. He's really physical in coverage. And so there's a lot there to like. He seems like a really sound tackler. He closes on the ball well. And so far I'm seeing a lot to like. I want to see how consistent it is throughout games. I know the basic idea, at least I think, depending on how he takes to the defense, is probably maybe being able to take over a similar role to what Justin Reed has.
Okay. Yeah, I think he's going to be a starting safety before it's all said and done. What about Norzad? Are you buying in to him being a starter one day? I mean, the centers come later. Guards can come later in the draft. See Trey Smith. Do you like what they got there?
I do. What I really love, and I'm not far into his film at all, but what I really love about him is the fact that he played all over the line. And right now, the Chiefs, obviously, you know, they've got the Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith decision coming up, basically.
And Joe Tooney, as far as walking away from a big number of Joe Tooney. All three of them are guys that they got to make some decisions about.
Absolutely. And it's basically impossible for them. Well, it's impossible for them to keep all three. There's no way. You're just not going to be able to do it. It's too much money to spend on your interior offensive line. It's probably impossible for them to keep Smith and Humphrey. It's just going to be too much money, especially with the way guards are getting paid right now. Tooney's already under contract, so you're helped out a little bit by that. So I think having a guy come in who has played multiple positions along the line, he's got some talent, it gives you some options to see what he looks like, at least in training camp. So I thought that was a really good pick. I love that they took another interior offensive lineman later in the draft, too, because that is low-key going to become a very big need here over the course of the next year or two.
Well, I like that, yeah, you take an interior lineman. Like, if you take a tackle late in the draft, I assume you're planning on moving them inside, right? Because, like, tackles, they can't find a tackle in the third round, right? We'll see. Maybe Juan Morris will buck that trend, but usually tackles go high. But you can find quality interior linemen late. There are certain positions you can nail late, and they, to me, played to the historical draft strengths. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. And I think they did a great job of that, trying to shop for where they've been able to find guys in the past.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited about all of it. Is there a position that got away? Is there one that, like, I know you like the draft, and you can't have everything, but was there a spot maybe when the Chiefs were coming up somewhere where you're like, ooh, I'd like this guy? I know you're excited about the draft, but was there a spot or two where one got away?
The biggest thing for me, and you know me, I'm generally, because I'm not much of a draft expert, so I'm more early on of the positions that I'm paying attention to. As much as I like Xavier Worthy's fit in Kansas City, and I absolutely love it, Brian Thomas Jr. was the one that got away there, too, a little bit. In terms of overall, like, position groups, I still stand here a little bit worried about the totality of the wide receiver. I would have loved to see them double dip with some of the guys that fell to the third or fourth round. or even the fifth round. And then I also, the defensive end group is still iffy. But, you know, I know they took some guys last year that they're hoping to contribute more. But those are the kind of the position group areas that still leave me wanting a little bit.
Do you have any inkling that somebody from last year's draft is going to break out? You got somebody you'd invest in right now to be that breakout guy? Because to me, like, when I sit and look at B.J. Thompson when he was drafted, and still to this point, I say Josh Kando 2.0. Right? Like, is there someone you'd bet on? You know, Nick Jones breaking out. I mean, we saw Chimari Connor play. We know we like them. Felix Onyedike Uzomah, are you bullish on him? We could even go back one more draft. Nazee Johnson, I know he got a lot of buzz, you know, in training camp last year before he got hurt. Anyone you're counting on to break out?
Sure. I really like Johnson, and I've heard good things about Jones. And it's hard not to have faith in any defensive back that Brett Veach found that Dave Merritt is coaching up, right? It's always like, well, he's at least going to be an average NFL pro, right? As though that's somehow a given. The thing with Felix is that his film as a rookie was really limited, of course, both in snap count and then because of that situationally. I still saw just some flashes. He's got to work on his get off at the line. He's got to do that. And if he does that, a lot of other things fall into place. What I saw, though, in flashes was that functional strength and hand fighting that he showed in college. I saw flashes of that. So I anticipate him coming along for a larger role this year. Will he ever, you know, will he be able to jump up the way Furious George has? No idea. But I saw enough flashes to make me think there's at least a possibility of it.
Okay, that makes sense. I'll take that. We're talking to the Chief of the North, his Chief of the North newsletter. Must read if you are a Chiefs fan. Of course, we're talking about Seth Kizer here in the program. Time for our Final Four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you suffer an orthopedic injury in everyday life or playing sports, the University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care. They're at 435 and all in Overland Park, weekdays 8 to 7, Saturdays 8 to 2. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics. I'll start you with this. Is Donovan Smith back with the Chiefs? What does your gut tell you?
My gut tells me no. It's what I would do, but I think they're going to see what happens with Kingsley and Morris.
Awfully valuable commodity that you are messing around with in Patrick Mahomes. He's really good at making people miss and getting rid of the ball and all those things, but yeah, I'm with you. I wouldn't mind. If they brought him back, I'll be like, okay, I get it. I'm good with that. All right, yep. What wide receiver leads this team in receptions this year?
I think in receptions, I think it'll be Hollywood Brown.
Really? Okay. Of course, the suspension to Rashee Rice factors into that as well.
And that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
Yep.
It factors into it as well. All right. How many hours of the draft did you actually watch?
like a total of, like, in terms of actually watching, like a total of like half an hour.
That's fine. Hey, he gets to film and studies it once he knows who's there. I love
it.
All right, and finally, does Travis Kelce have another 1,000-yard season in his career left in him?
I think he's got two left in him, and then I think he retires.
Ooh.
I have a lot of confidence that last year he got hurt right before the year started and then was asked to carry too much of a burden with an offense that didn't have any wide receivers. So I think you're going to see more of what we saw in the playoffs last year. He lost that step, you know, 3 years ago, and he still gets open on film. So I think it's the 2 years left, and then I think he calls it a day.
All right. Seth, you're the man. Great stuff as always. We always appreciate the time. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
There he goes, Seth Kizer, Chief of the North newsletter. Check it out if you love the breakdowns. He does a great, great job of it. All right, we'll take a break. We come back, we'll wrap up with our end of the hour answer. That's still to come. We'll also give you the kicker here in the program. Don't forget, we're going to be on the road tomorrow down at the Barrio Taqueria at Martini Corner there and 31st Street downtown. Make some plans, come down, enjoy some tacos. Couple of Coronas, never a bad time at the Barrio Taqueria.
We're almost done for the day, but There's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, the Joe's burnt end of the hour answer. In honor of Curtis, I went with a weird uniform number. This wide receiver won a national championship in college wearing the number 47. Who is he?
Michael Irvin.
That's the one.
Yeah, Michael Irvin wore 47. For the Canes, on the cover of Sports Illustrated, tough one to forget, Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Never, ever forget Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Best barbecue in the world is at 47th and Mission, 119th and Strangline, and 117th and Row. And, of course, grill like a pro. All their know-how, the sauces, rubs, utensils, the grill itself. That's where I bought my last three grills, including my mom's grill, is at the Kansas City Barbecue store, right across the parking lot from Joe's in Olathe at 119th and Strangline Road. Get there and get grilling. They are the best in the business at the Kansas City Barbecue Store. Online, by the way, at thekansascitybbqstore.com. By the way, the Royals win today. Again, if you're just getting into your car or you live in a shoe, 6-1, they beat the Blue Jays. We'll point out that makes them now on their 19-game voyage through teams who at that time had winning records. They've knocked the Jays to a sub-500, but they now sit at 7-6 through 13. They've got six games at home. And if that's not enough for you to buy in, which is fine, but I will tolerate no one bitching and moaning about how, oh, you know, they're not doing this or they're not doing that, or MJ Melendez candidate. If you sat and at some point said, oh, I want competitive baseball. You know, if they just play 500, I'd be thrilled. Well, they're giving you more than that.
Welcome to it.
So no griping. 19-13 right now. 594 baseball. They're a game and a half behind the Guardians. Guardians still yet to play today. One of only a couple of games tonight. Guardians at Astros. The Astros are heavy favorites as Justin Verlander goes to the bump looking to continue his assault on 300 wins. Look it up, Curtis. It's a thing. The other thing is, remember what bad baseball is. Because the Colorado Rockies are 7-22, but that's not even the whole story about it. They're 7-22 and they have trailed in every one of their 29 games. Like, that's almost impossible.
That's remarkable.
In fact, it was impossible until they did it. It had never been done before. 28 straight games by the St. Louis Browns, who, by the way, left town after doing it. I think it was the Browns that did it. It's never been done before. They have trailed in 29 straight games. So don't think that, you know, it's bad. It's not bad. It's bad in Colorado. That is god-awful. Look, enjoy the ride. They may not go to the playoffs, but enjoy the ride while it lasts.